Jimmy Crane, Jimmy Crane's a nerd. Jimmy Crane's an improv nerd. Jimmy Crane's a nerd. Oh, Jimmy Crane, Jimmy Crane's a nerd. Jimmy Crane's an improv nerd. Jimmy Crane's a nerd.
Hi, this is Jimmy Crane, and this is another episode of Improv Nerd. Our guest today from the Onion News Network, he is the head writer, Andy Mira. If you've been listening to this podcast on a regular basis, you know that my wife and I are in the process of moving to a three-bedroom townhouse. And it's important to know that it's three bedrooms because three bedrooms implies that in the future we may have a child. Now, this morning my wife informed me that after going to therapy that she is going to get off the pill at the end of the month, which terrifies me, and that is not an understatement. I am really, really afraid. Also, something happened this week. I made a huge mistake. I really fucked up. This month, I was planning to go to both the Omaha Improv Festival in Omaha and the Del Close Marathon in New York at the UCB. I was also going to do a show at the Magnet with Armando Diaz when I was there. And I realized after I posted something on Facebook that Dylan, who is heading up the Omaha Improv Festival, said to me, that's the same weekend. So I was so angry at myself, and then I felt so sad and so disappointed that I could not do both things. And what goes on in my head is, well, I'm a real fuck-up. The UCB is going to never want to work with me again. The Magnet's never going to want to work with me again. And everybody's going to think that I'm a flake and that I'm unprofessional. So this interview with Andy Mira, I really like, and I hope you enjoy it. It was very interesting because both Ben Caprero, my producer, and myself both wanted to get Andy on the show for a while. And when we approached Andy, he was kind of resident. Resident? Is that the right word? He was kind of ambivalent, I guess is a better word, about doing improvisation, which always forces us to be more clever, come up with a creative way to work around it. So what we decided to do in this is we actually went out and got people to submit scripts. Since Andy is not only a wonderful writer and performer, he's also a wonderful director and teacher. So we got one script, and we got two or three people to get up and perform it, and then Andy was going to workshop it right then and there. So the first part is going to be the interview. The second part is him workshopping this sketch live. And then the third part, Andy goes into detail about the process at The Onion. And he also talks, which I thought is really helpful, what he thinks the best way to get hired at The Onion. Please enjoy this interview.
He's a nerd. Oh, yeah. Jimmy's a nerd. He's a nerd. Oh, yeah. Jimmy's a nerd. He's a nerd. Oh, yeah. Jimmy's a nerd. He's a nerd. Oh, yeah, Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd.
Andy!
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great, thank you.
So you grew up in Needham, Massachusetts.
I did.
Okay. It's just outside of Boston. And your dad was a journalist.
Yes.
How did that influence you become a comedy writer?
Well, he's a very brilliant writer. It didn't influence me to become a comedy writer, but he is a great writer, and so I grew up just writing.
What's he like?
He's, what is he like? Wow, that's such a big question to talk about my dad.
Do you have a good relationship with
him? I have a great relationship with my dad.
Okay.
He's a great writer. He's a great, he's a very athletic guy.
Mm-hmm.
He likes his free time. He plays golf a lot. He is funny. I don't know.
Funny in what way?
Yeah. That's a good question. He's got a really good ear. He's always had a really good ear for, like, individually funny lines. from people and from movies. So like he will like zero in on these like bizarre lines in commercials and in movies that are just like standalone funny that you wouldn't identify.
So you're out at dinner and...
So we're out at dinner and he's like the last person who's going to make anybody laugh. He's going to try very hard to kind of like make friends with a waitress or be like personable and charming. Mm-hmm. But he's not a sort of like garrulous life of the party, but he's this kind of like one-on-one guy. I don't know.
So in fifth grade, you and your friends did this SNL spoof called Monday Afternoon Live.
Yes.
Tell us about that. Do you feel shame about that? Embarrassed?
No, I don't. I don't. It was a great experience. It was like one of these instances where I was like, okay, look, guys, we all love Saturday Night Live. We've watched a bunch of episodes. Let's sit down and make our own episode of Saturday Night Live. And like, of course, it was impossible to write it. And it was all just, it was dumb fifth grader bits.
Can you give us an example of one of the bits?
You know, really the only thing that I can remember from that show, so we did some of our own stuff, but then we did old classic SNL bits. So like, which is like real quick. It's like, all right, well, our stuff isn't very good, but this Phil Hartman sketch is incredible, so let's do that. So I remember playing Phil Hartman as Lee Iacocca. Talking to Harvey Fierstein. I can't remember if I was Harvey Fierstein or Lee Iacocca. But it was something like, he asked me something sexual, and I told him, you'd have to buy a Ram van for that. And like, I remember at the time, it was like our teachers were, we like had begged our teachers for 2 weeks to like let us do this Monday Afternoon Live. And they finally let us. And then as we're doing it, and it's like filled with like sexual innuendo and just like generally inappropriate stuff, they're like sitting back and like with the arms crossed and very angry that we're doing this. Which like my main thinking about it now is like that was such a complete template for like everything I've done in comedy. It's like some authority figure standing in the back with their arms crossed, like glaring at me while I'm doing it, which feels like such a great, like, I mean, that just feels like so integral to me at this point of mm-hmm. like, oh yeah, well that's what it is. So it started, it was like fifth grade, just like, yeah, no, you guys shouldn't be doing that.
So for me, that, mm-hmm. that's what stops me from mm-hmm. going even further.
Yeah.
Because it's like that, like, stop it, you're not doing it right.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you're going to get in trouble.
Yeah.
But you don't have that.
No, I always had such a, like, just a jerk attitude about that. It's like that actually inspires me just even thinking about it right now. I'm like, yeah.
Well, you also that again. You also said that you got in trouble when you were in elementary school.
Yeah, I mean, growing up, like I would constantly get in trouble, and not for like the worst things in the world, but it was just like this like insistent nag of like I hate being like I have no. I was telling somebody this last week when it was just so dark and wet and cold, this, you know, and there's like, you just felt like you couldn't get out of it.
And it's April.
It's just like, yeah. It's like April, and it's like, you have no control over your life. Like, I was so, that was my entire childhood. I just felt like I had no control over anything. And it was like, all right, well, if I can rip the toilet paper dispenser off the wall, and I can like throw it at a teacher, well, then I know I'm gonna get in trouble, and he'll get pissed, you know? Like, so that was a very animating force.
And what
for
did
me.
Your parents do when you did stuff like that?
They got angry. I mean, they gave me, like, I have a little daughter, so I've like, you know, gone back and like started to talk to my parents about child rearing.
Right.
And they were like, yeah, you know, we knew with you, like, you were okay, and we had a good teacher in like second grade who was like, look, things are just gonna go off the rails for him for like 10 years, and then he'll be fine and it'll be okay. But just like, you know, weather it. So like, you know, they claim to have had like some perspective about it.
We just left you alone for those
10 years. Yeah. You're right. You know, do what you're gonna do.
Yeah.
But you know, they were. I mean, they obviously would like get upset if I would get in trouble, but they were generally pretty even keeled about it.
Were you like in the pot smoker or drinking and all that stuff?
Not really. And like I think I'm really glad I did not get into pot in high school, because I think I never would have. That would have been it for me. I would have been like, this is the best.
Like, you would have been on a couch right now.
Yeah, I really would. I was such that personality of, like, convince myself that, like, yeah, no, this is fine. I am coming up with such great ideas right now. I'm going to sit here and smoke weed with my friends, and we're going to listen to music and just figure it out. And so I didn't. So I was not necessarily into that kind of stuff. It was more, and like the community that I grew up in, it was more like people driving around getting into trouble kind of thing. I grew up in the 1950s. American Graffiti was that was not really big for me.
And then you go to Columbia University, and mm-hmm. you are a film study and creative writing major.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, what did you want to be?
I wanted to be a guy who made sketch comedy videos. Was really it. Or a philosophy professor. I had like the idea I was going to be like a philosophy professor and make sketch comedy right. videos. I had, like, when I was in high school, the state was on, had just hit, and like they were kind of just barely older than my friends and I, and it was like, oh, here are guys who went to NYU together and figured out how to make videos together, and like their sensibilities seemed so like wrought and distinct, and they had their own show on MTV, and I was like, well, that's perfect. That's my future. Like, that's all I'm gonna do.
And then you end up writing tons of plays.
And then I ended up writing tons of plays. So, yeah. So then nothing happened quickly. I was kind of around that. Like when I was in college, I was sort of around that world of TV. I had interned at Saturday Night Live, was kind of like had done some little things in New York television wise. But like in general, I had felt that it. I didn't see the path. Like, I just didn't see how I got from that point to, like, where I wanted to be, which was, like, in charge. And
that's what you want to be?
In charge?
Yeah.
Yeah, I sort of... Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I have sort of a tortured relationship with that, but, like...
In what way?
In what way is it tortured?
Yeah.
It's tortured to the extent of, like, I oftentimes don't like being in charge. It's nice when somebody else is in charge and I can just be a foot soldier and somebody tells me what to do. But like at the end of the day, it's just one of those things where I'm like, let me do it. Let me just figure it out. So I was never very good at like being an assistant. I was never very good at like kind of just being a normal person in a group who could like help other people.
But you were a writing assistant at Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, for a little bit.
How was that experience?
It was fine. I mean, it's like a very, it's like an amazing place and it's like a wonderful place. But like, you just constantly feel, I felt very, very small at the time. And there are, for the right personality and the right people, like that's such a wonderful, incredible opportunity. And like, they can make a ton out of it and like people go to do wonderful things. For me, I just felt like I was making a ton of copies, and I couldn't figure out why people weren't asking me to write all the sketches, which was like, and I wouldn't have done a good job. I mean, there were amazing people who were doing it. There's like no reason to have that in my head, but that was like a very, you know, that was just kind of my clouded perception of it. So I felt like I couldn't stay. I couldn't stay like in a position like that doing that.
And then you study at UCB mm-hmm. in New York, and... How did that help you with writing?
I was always like improvising was always a to me, especially at the early on, like the main conduit to writing. It was like get a group of people together, improvise something, and then like take it apart, you know, figure it out, and then write it down. Like, so a lot of sketch that I was working on did that. And also...
But you weren't a performer at this point, right?
I was never at all a good performer. Mm-hmm. But I was, you know, I was a performer. Like, I would improvise. I would act in stuff that I would write and do that kind of thing. What I really liked about UCB was just that intense focus on a single game. And that was really at the time, like, my intense, my focus in terms of sketch, and probably still is, was just like, here's one single thing that's happening that I'm just like unpacking in a particular way. And also at that time, like it appealed to a very heady side of me. So it was like a very intellectual side, like a side that could sort of parse out comedy without investing as like an actor, as a character, not filtering something through the lens of character, but filtering through the lens of like, here's an idea. Oh, that's really funny. If that thing happened, I could figure out a bunch of ways to put variations on that.
And then in 2005, you come here to Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and you you take a writing class at Second City with Mary Scruggs,
mm-hmm.
who was a wonderful teacher, and she encourages you to come back to Chicago, right?
Mm-hmm.
What did you learn from Mary?
I mean, from Mary, I pretty much learned, like, everything. I mean, she was just, when I came to Chicago, in my mind, it was very, I was in a spot of very, like, incredibly intellectual approach to comedy. And, like, when I first encountered Second City, I liked it. But I was like, I don't know, like, why are they doing so many characters? Like, why are there, like, people trying to pretend to be somebody else? Why not just, like, say, like, I'm a doctor, and then something else? You know, and I couldn't really figure that out, why that was, you know, what was happening. But at the same time, I felt very, like, burned out in the stuff that I was doing. And the way that Mary would talk, so I had studied playwriting in college, but had completely left it behind, and the way Mary talked, it was like just a playwright. It was just like everything from character behavior, emotional point of view, human interaction, observed behavior, relatability, like all these things that like were sort of on tickling me, but that I had not found a way to embrace at all.
So the stuff you had learned at Columbia, the playwriting stuff, mm-hmm. you didn't apply it to sketch until then.
I could never figure it out. To me, they're completely different worlds. I thought there was like no connection whatsoever.
So now, how do you take that playwriting stuff and apply it to sketch?
Well, I mean, to me right now, it's critical. I mean, the stuff that I like I do love character-based stuff. I love like stuff that has a through-running emotion, like something that you can connect to, relatability to it. But I also still love the absurdist stuff, and I still love the idea stuff. And to me now, it's like bringing those two together. So like, for example, with My Mans.
Which is the Comedy Central pilot.
Yeah, and the sketch group sort of mm-hmm. outside of that. Like our main focus was always, you know, these games, like very like specific comedic games. Mm-hmm. And ideas and sort of absurdist images, but all completely locked and grounded in a character with recognizable behavior who you can like track from moment to moment and scene to scene, that you can find some way to connect to. So to me, they're like, yeah, it's like I feel like my entire experience in Chicago is about like laying those two things on top of each other.
And you met My Mans, which is Tim Robinson, right?
Yep.
And Mark Ratterman.
Yep.
You met them when you were directing Touring Company.
Right.
And a lot of people say that it's the shittiest job. They say they say it's like babysitting, the money isn't very good. What was your experience?
Well, it's like babysitting. The money isn't very good. It's the shittiest job. I mean, I had a good experience to the extent of, like, I worked with an incredible cast. Like, it was a really unbelievable group of people.
Who was in the cast?
So it was Tim and Mark, Tim Balt, Mary Soane, Dana Carcioli, Rebecca Hansen, Pat O'Brien was there for a while, Brendan Jennings was there for a while.
Jeez.
So it was, like, a really hot group of people.
Yeah.
So to get a chance to like, so yeah, like there's a lot of things that are not great about it, but the chance to be forced to work with these people for X amount of hours every single week and just get together and do stuff was awesome. And I think we, you learn a ton about just professionalism. You learn a ton about execution. You learn a ton about like making comedy work for audiences that aren't comedy audiences, which was such a huge eye opener for me. Like, I never cared. Like, I just, like, my kind of like entrance into sketch was like, I don't care if you're laughing, you know, like, I think this is hilarious. If you don't laugh, it's because you don't get it, and that's your fault.
How did you make that adjustment? How do you make that adjustment?
Through like a lot of failure. I mean, a lot of like really sitting there, and I think Second City was the hugest thing for me of like having being forced to put it up, be like, this is a great idea. I think this is awesome. And then it just, you sit there in front of this dead house with, you know, just it completely dying, and you start to adjust. You just say, well, that's not, I can't do that. And then you start to like, for me, embrace that relationship with the audience. And embrace like what that means.
So there was almost a sense, and I can relate to this, that you were disconnected from the audience.
Oh,
before.
Yeah, extremely, extremely. And I think
superior in a way.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely came into the guys that I looked up to coming up in comedy, like very much had
which
that
is,
attitude
which is who? Which
of
is?
Like of like those guys from the state, which is like, you know, the David Waynes and mm-hmm. Michael Showalters and like, and. The people that I was seeing a lot, which was like in New York, that alternative comedy scene that was happening there was definitely this air of like, well, we are just the best, and if you don't like it, then that's your fault. And
kind of the smarmy, snarky a little, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And everybody called them assholes. You know, everybody hated them, and they kind of like reveled in that. And I was like, all right, yeah, that's cool. I mean, because you're like 18 years old. Like, that's how you feel. You're like, yeah, I'm the smartest. This is the best. And then, you know, you get older, and that changes. Then you feel like the worst. You know? Like, But like in that mix, like that coming in is at that attitude. And then like I had an amazing experience. I got to be the assistant to one of the directors, to Jim Carlson, when he was directing an ETC show. Mm-hmm. And just to like see that process and to like see that every single night, that interaction that they were having with the audience. I mean, that was like just an incredibly eye-opening experience in terms of like, oh yeah, me and you are like, there's a connection.
We're into this together.
We're
not against each other.
We're doing this together. And that starting to like bring that into like, oh, that there's a bonded space between us that's important and that needs to be nurtured and built and dealt with and contextualized and all those things was like such a huge eye-opening. And so like in the touring company, you know, that's where I started to work that kind of stuff out. So it's like I had these other ideas, but it was like, oh, okay, how do you try to like just make something work?
And you said about Mimans, at least for the pilot on Comedy Central, that a lot of the material was developed when you guys were in the back of the van touring.
Yeah.
And we had Brian Stack on from mm-hmm. Conan, and mm-hmm. he said a lot of their stuff that they would develop, mm-hmm. it would just be bits, you know, in the office. Why are those things the ones that are the ones that make us laugh and end up in the show? Why are those the golden ones?
That's just like the raw, to me that's just like, A, it's the raw stuff. It's just like unfiltered. You don't need to explain a lot. You don't need to contextualize. It's just like something that's core funny. And then it's also like, it's like the people whose sensibilities you respect the most. And it's like, if I can make Tim laugh or if Tim can make Mark laugh, that's like such a huge, it feels like that's a huge achievement because you're like, well, that's the guy that I think is the best. So like if that works, then like there's got to be something to that sensibility. And then it's like, and then also that it's playful. And I think also the like, you know, for like Mark and Tim, like they're such playful guys that like a bit that's absorbing is one that's like can go on for hours and hours and hours. And so there's gonna, when that's compressed down, like there's gonna be something fun about that and something that's like, that then reaches out to somebody like, oh yeah, that's kind of fun. That's fun to play with. Like, I don't know if you saw on SNL this past week, Tim did his Tesh,
yes,
John
I did.
Tesh
yes.
sketch.
Yeah.
Which is just layering lyrics onto the NBA theme song. Which is
so
like,
it was like, duh, 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 and then he would sing.
Basketball.
Right, yeah.
And dunk it.
Right,
like,
yeah.
That was
about right. And then we couldn't understand why they didn't get it.
Right, yeah. Right, right. And that's just, like, great. Like, that's such a core little engine, comedic engine, that, like, you could try it at home. Like, it's a, you know, it's amazing. Like, you can just do that, and he could do that forever, and it would continue to be funny.
Was that a bit he had done with you before?
Yeah, that was a bit that he used to do. Hit Mark and Tim and our old music director, Brian from Redco, would do that, and Brian would play the music, and they would do that. So yeah, it was like an old one that would just, like an old standard that they would just go back to over and over again. And then it gets shaped out, you know, and like they add an ending to it and they add different bits to it. But like, but yeah, that core thing that remains there. Yeah, I don't know. They're the most fun. They're just the most fun.
Okay, so we're going to switch gears for just a second because usually at this part of the show we do some improvising. Mm-hmm. But tonight we're doing something different and I'm really excited because we have got we got like 15 scripts submitted in a very short period of time. And I'm going to announce the winner. It's Helpline and it's Andy Shravosky. How is it, Andy? Andy Shiraski. Did I get it, Andy?
Yeah.
And Danny Gelvin with contributions by Gretchen Eng. Did I get Gretchen?
Yes.
Because Andy was very concerned before that Gretchen got credit. So if you're listening, Gretchen, to the podcast, you, your friends are looking out for you. They're going to come down and they're going to do Helpline, which is a sketch. And you're going to take a look at it and we're going to workshop this sketch. So,
everything you say will remain confidential and you will remain completely anonymous. I'm here to help or just to listen.
Hey Rachel, it's Stacy. What you doing?
I'm at work. You called me here.
Oh, cool. Anyone suicidal tonight?
You know I can't tell you that.
Yes, that means no. Boring.
Stacy, this line is for people who have a serious problem. Do you have a serious problem?
Yeah, Rachel, I do.
Okay, what is it?
I never see you anymore!
Okay, Stacy, now really is not the time.
Why? Because I graduated? I only live like 2 blocks away from campus.
If someone from the health center comes in, I could get fired, or worse, someone might call and actually have a problem and not be able to get through.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry that my best friend completely ignored me and making me call her at work just to talk to her isn't a big enough problem for you.
That's not what I mean.
No, it's okay. I just found this bottle of pills here, and I think I'll take all of them.
No, 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 don't do that.
Okay, I'm off.
Good.
If you tell me what you and Ryan Green were talking about on the quad yesterday, you looked really into it.
What were you doing on the quad?
That's where I compost. My building doesn't compost, Rachel.
You don't compost.
Yeah, I do. I take all my garbage out to the quad and set it on fire.
That was you? The campus newspaper thought that was a hate crime.
Is that another word for composting?
No!
Oh no, I just dropped my toaster in the bathtub. Time to jump in.
Stacy, stop, no. Listen, I really need to get off the phone. Here. Don't make your weird drunk Muppet voice in me.
Well, I'm not drunk right now. Wait, Rachel. 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 I am not drunk right now. And frankly, I don't think your supervisor would like to hear that you're making fun of the people calling you.
You're the one who calls it your drunk mother.
Only when I'm drunk.
You're not drunk now.
Oh my God, some yelling.
I'm not yelling.
Yes, you are. I'm going to write a note and say it was all Garrett's fault.
Stacy, don't do that. Stacy, listen to me. Stacy, listen. Please do not write
a note. Oh, this is a real one. Rachel, Rachel, we need a professional now. Stacy,
this is Candace at the Student Help Center.
Hey, Candace.
Stacy, listen to me. I'm searching your number in the student directory so we can send help. Wait, are you a student here?
Funny story. I actually graduated. So, like, housies? Or nunsies? It's closer to nunsies.
Okay, Stacy. This line is just for students. If you're in real trouble, my suggestion for you is to call 911.
Yeah, but
don't get drunk, Muppet voice.
Okay, fine. Look, it's just Ever since I graduated, I'm super bored all the time, and no one will give me a job, and, like, when you get arrested off campus, you legit get arrested.
Stacy, you're gonna have to get over graduation. We all do. Now, I want you to apologize to Rachel for abusing what is a very important position she fills on this campus.
Fine.
Hello?
Hey, Rachel, listen. I would like to apologize for my behavior. But I can't right now. I'm driving off a cliff.
What?
Blackout.
Okay. So, Jimmy, we should talk about this?
Yeah, let's talk
about
this.
Great. Well, first of all, very...
Move over here. He's not a photographer.
So, let's... First of all, thanks for doing this, guys. It's very ballsy to put something up in this environment. This is great. So, is this a sketch you've done before?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. And let's see. So, guys, I'm totally unqualified to talk about sketches. That's what I know. So, you guys have done this before. Where did the idea for this sketch come from?
It came from one of my friends. Had a status on Facebook saying, you know, tonight I'll be working at my college's, you know, student helpline. If you are worried about finals or you have any other problems, call in. It's completely anonymous. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, it's not anonymous. You just outed yourself as the caller on Facebook. So I thought, what if someone called in and it's just like, hey, Rachel, what's up? How you doing? What's going on? Let's chat.
Yeah. And then the more we like talked about it, because we were writing a different sketch, of course. and then we're like, wait, this idea is more fun. Mm-hmm. We had this idea that like if someone just calls to chat and like wants to hang on the phone with her, the game that she could play is threaten to kill herself so that Rachel has to stay on the phone with her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And like what kind of obnoxious person would do that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it's great, and I think like it's. I knew you guys several years ago, and it's great. I haven't seen you in a while, and it's great to see you do your thing. And it's like, I think you guys had a nice line. Like, so I guess I'll use this as an opportunity to kind of like talk about this and to talk about like what I would look at in sketch, which is like, is there like a dynamic line between these two characters? And it feels like for sure there is. Like, you're able to mess with her. She reacts. Like, we have something that's like taking place between there. Which I think is great, and I think we got some like you know like some of your turns were really nice. This to me is one thing of like people talk about stakes in sketch, you know, like well what's at stake? It's like something at stake, and so like kind of you know she feels like there's something at stake because like maybe you're gonna kill yourself. There also feels like kind of there's something at stake with, you know, your boss coming in. Is like, is she going to keep her job or not? So there's like, to me, there's like, oh, there's those elements of tension that kind of like, that can move our sketch forward. Like, one thing for me is like, I don't know if I ever really believe that like, she's going to, like, is death really present in this scene? You know, like, do we really think that she feels like she's gonna kill herself? You know, I'm not sure. And there's also something to me, there's something going on with like being on the phone and you guys getting locked into these chairs that the space feels very like rigid to me, where it's like, you're here, and it's like, are they ever gonna get out of the chair? Are they ever gonna like break through that? And I feel like you see a ton of chair phone call sketches out there. And like, I would have a question of like, how could we get rid of the phones and push things forward a little bit? And you can chime in if you have an answer on that. You know, but like something that occurs to me is like, well, if, and I like when he, well, do you describe to me like you, when you're talking to Amy, like what do you think that game is right there? When you're talking to Amy.
Oh, the very end?
With her. Yeah.
Well, for me, I know during in writing it, as we were pushing through, we kept saying like it's such a terrible game that my character's playing.
Yeah.
she has to get called on it.
Yeah.
And she has to have the tables turned on her, and she has to completely eat crow about what she's been doing.
Yeah.
So I think the game with Amy's character when she comes on is just taking this very sort of, this character is very pleased with herself at how she's twisted Rachel around her finger.
Yeah.
And just like sending her down the toilet.
Yeah.
And having her have to admit what she's really worried about is that she doesn't have much of a life outside of college.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what, one thing that struck me as like interesting about that is like having to like prove to somebody that you're suicidal. Like, oh, no, I am. I do want to kill myself. Like, and I don't think you do. Like, oh, yes, no, I hate myself very much. And I almost wonder, like, you know, if there's a way to find it so that you're not still not talking to her on the phone, but, like, if somebody comes in, you know, like, the police come into your house on, like, a security check of, like, oh, we've got a report that you're suicidal. Like, you're telling me that you're just screwing around with your friend on the phone? Like, oh, no, absolutely not. I am very suicidal. Like, and then somebody having to, like, who's not suicidal, having to, like, pretend, like be, show that they are suicidal. Like, I don't know, somehow to me there's, like, something extra there in terms of, like, taking a risk, you know, in terms of, like, being able to, like, give something else extra to us of, like, okay, make the best case to us that you don't want to live anymore. You know, like, then there's something to that. Like, if you could convince us, like, oh, yeah, and it's not just like, well, I can't find a job, I can't do this or that, but, like, tell me why you want to kill yourself, you know? And, like, with somebody who's skeptical. That, like, I feel like you could it could break out of, like, that little box there, and I think somehow it could also address, like, the issue of, like an elevated risk that feels present somewhere in the scene.
Could we take that part that you just said and improvise it?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Do you guys know what?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we can take it. Yeah.
Yeah, I said sure. Like, oh, yeah, it's pretty sure. These guys in front of this can do it. Yeah. Do you guys want to try that?
Of course. Yeah, sure.
So, Candace is on at this point, yeah?
Yeah, if the Candace character were this one, would actually be on this side of the stage and here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To have a face-to-face confrontation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know what? Do you even want to try first just doing it, but with, we can, and then we can get to improvising it. Do it with you on this side of the stage.
Mm-hmm.
Do the lines as you had it before.
Oh, okay.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, I see.
Let's just see what that looks like.
So I'll take it back from, I'm going to write a note.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. I'm going to write a note and say it was all your fault!
Stacey, listen to me, do not write that note. I'm on the phone. Why am I on the phone? Listen to me, do not write that note.
Oh, this is a real one. Rachel, we need a professional now. Stacey, this is Candace at the student health
Hey, Candace!
Stacey, listen to me. I'm searching your number in the student directory so we can send help. Wait, are you a student here?
Funny story. I actually graduated for, like, halvesies. Or nunsies. It's closer to nunsies.
Okay, Stacey, this line is just for students, so if you're in real trouble, my suggestion to you is to call 911.
Yeah, but me.
Don't you drunk Muppet voice me.
Fine, look, Candace, it's just, like, ever since I graduated college, I'm super bored all the time, and no one will give me a job, and, like, when you get arrested off campus, you legit get arrested.
Stacey, you're gonna have to get over graduation. We all do. Now, I want you to apologize to Rachel for abusing what is a very important position she fills on this campus.
Fine. Rachel, I would like to apologize for my behavior. But I can't right now. I have to go drive off a cliff.
Good. Thank you. So, like, and we could mess with one more thing, but, like, it strikes me right off the bat that this character, okay, so then suddenly I picture, like, this character in, you know, whatever, you know, decrepit apartment, you know, they're living in, and like, you know, they're like, you know, like underwear, whatever they are, and suddenly it's so much more exposed. Mm-hmm. Like having people come in, like it's a moment of exposure. Mm-hmm. So like people coming in and suddenly like calling, like, wait, you're a student? Like, yeah, well, I live off campus, clearly. So, you know, and I think having to like play that game of like, why am I a legit caller? Like, and I do want to definitely kill myself. And then it makes me want, like, in the casting of this, like, that, you know, if I could cast anybody, it would be, like, an incredibly intimidating-looking cop, you know? Like, the more I feel that sense of, like, threat and danger, like, to this person, then I feel like the stronger that moment is going to be, because it's like, oh, yeah, they're in trouble. They're, like, screwing with the law, and now they're getting called on it, and they're having to, like, try to weasel their way out of something where they have a lot of pressure on them.
So, Andy, what would you tell these guys as they go away with this script today, what to work on?
Mm-hmm. My 2 cents on it would be to find a way to, like, use that starting dynamic that you have with the phones, but then find a way to open up this space in the subsequent dynamic, and, like, to find a way to invade his space over here, mm-hmm. so that somebody's coming in, and that it forces him to scramble more, you know, mm-hmm. to like to find his way out of whatever this problem is, and to weasel his way out of the problem. And just like my own like sensibility 2 cents would be like him having to prove that he's like, definitely going to kill himself.
And how would you do that? Just as an example, proving himself that he's going to kill himself.
Like, did something occur to you right off the bat?
Very dark choices. Certainly, like running to the kitchen drawer to grab the nearest knife,
Or like sharpening the knives because they're still dull from the block.
Because watching this, I didn't believe he was gonna. You brought this up, but I didn't believe that the stakes were high enough that he was gonna kill himself.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And I think he really could go darker.
Yeah,
you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and I think that's right. And I think, you know, then to me it's like the sensibility of the group at that point of like, and what the feel and like the show is, mm-hmm. you know, like there could be something where we felt like physical threat, you know what I mean? Like at that point, like is there a threat of physical violence that's gonna take place on the stage between them? Is there a threat of just like, you know, him laying out, like, so there's the like, I graduated and I couldn't find a job, that sort of like depressed, you know, like lowercase d depressed.
Yeah.
But like, is there something that's like, that sort of like feels like darker and sort of more cutting,
yeah.
that like he can get into.
That's fun to hear, because I remember when we were writing it, we were like, is this too dark?
And oh, really?
Clearly it's not.
I say not dark enough.
Great.
Give him a hand. Great job. How was that for you, Andy?
Well, I really felt like I was blathering on, but that's amazing for them to get up here and do that, because that's an incredibly hard thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And getting probably everybody here like takes classes, and so like to do it in front of an audience is.
But
tough,
I noticed your teaching style right from the get go. You disarmed them. Like certainly there's confidence because you're the head writer, mm-hmm. for the Onion News Network. And there was this like, well, I, you know, this is, you know, there was a kindness to it.
Mm.
Is that your approach when you teach?
I think so. There's probably a couple people here I've had class with who's shaking their head.
Yes. Is that his approach?
Yeah.
I mean, I have so much respect for anybody who like does this stuff that like I have no interest in being a bully. Nor do I even think that I have like any kind of definitive answer to share. Like this is probably a limited example of that. Like I'm much more interested in like having a conversation and sort of like finding it out together.
Right. I noticed something that was very interesting towards the end. The suggestion of make it darker, and then you noticed Danny, his mm-hmm. eyes kind of rolled up, or mm-hmm. he kind of. And you said, "Oh, do you have an idea?" So mm-hmm. you were in relationship with the students.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think I'm always I mean, at the end of the day, it's like what their ideas and what they're going to do. And I think it's, I mean, the good notes that I feel like I've gotten have just been those ones where it's like, oh, yeah, obviously. You know, just that slight outside perspective that helps you come to it, arrive at it. And to me, it's like, you know, your question of like, what should they walk away with? Like, if they can't walk away with something that's useful to them, that's just sort of like, well, that's a good idea. I don't know how I would do that. Then that doesn't have a ton of value. I don't see that as having a ton of value.
Last August, you became the head writer of the Onion News Network. Mm-hmm. What do you like about that job? Mm.
I love that full time I'm committed to writing, and that's been. I love directing and teaching and like doing the like wide variety of things, but like. That right now I'm so focused just on words, and that's a great, really awesome.
And what is the process of writing sketches for the Onion News Network?
So we a few times a week we do a huge idea pitch. So like all of the staff people, myself, like we all send in a whole mass of ideas for.
How big is the staff?
So it's myself and then four staff writers. We'll send in ideas for videos, and then we have a group of probably 30 contributors who also submit ideas, and that's like a list of 10 to 20 ideas that it's like a headline plus a paragraph description of that. Mm-hmm. And then we'll cull through those, and we'll just start like whittling that list down.
So how many would you get for a week, let's say?
So anywhere from like 800.
800?
You know, coming in on like our biggest round of stuff. Like here's 800 ideas on a Monday for 10 videos or something. Mm-hmm. Or we'll get, on a sort of day-to-day when we're just doing, it's probably like 100 to 200 ideas if we're doing like a daily video, meaning something that came in that morning and then we're writing it on that news story and going to put it out the next day. So maybe we'll get 100 to 200 ideas. We'll go through those. We'll settle on and literally out of that, we'll get down to like 1 to 3 ideas that we'll actually want to be scripting out. Mm-hmm. And then those ideas will get assigned out to people, and so somebody will take an hour.
Would that be a staff writer?
To a staff writer. Like if depending on the volume, maybe I will do it. But
what if I pitched an idea?
If you pitch an idea,
I pitch an idea. I'm at home. Yeah. I'm on my computer. I pitch you an idea.
Yeah.
Because you and you like my idea.
Yep. Yep.
Do I get paid? or do I get like an Onion swag, like a mug or something?
Yeah. What you'd, well, you would not do that, Jimmy. Because let's let everybody know, don't do that.
Okay. But I know there's people that do submit stuff.
There's people that submit stuff, but our contributors definitely are, like, they're battle tested. They're great. They do it every, you know, 3 times a week.
Okay.
And they're, you know, it's a very.
I was one of those people.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. I'm one of those people. Okay.
Sorry, I'm having trouble with the hypothetical.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So if you're one of those
I'm
people.
I'm one of those people, and I submit you an idea, and you like my idea.
Yeah. So we'll use it in one of two ways. Either we'll make a video out of it, or we'll make a one liner out of it, which means we'll like use it as like a ticker joke, or we'll use it as a next up joke. And so you would get paid a certain amount if your video buddies. That's like ballpark. It fluctuates depending on the thing that we're doing.
Okay. Now, if I came up with a video idea, again, I'm hypothetically, would I be invited to write on that process?
Probably not. There's times that we've used contributors to script things when we've done a large round of videos, but usually it's just the staff guys. So the staff people script everything. We'll move it through. You know, people will work on it individually, get notes, they'll go off, they'll do a revision, and then we'll come back, and like the last pass is always together. So we just go literally like word by word through it, and then send it off to the production guys.
And do you call me and say we used your idea, or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. So what we do for the contributors is they see, every time they submit, they get a list. It's called our RIP, which is like the kind of short list of ideas that we're thinking about. So they get to see that whole thing. So they can see, like, well, their idea didn't get picked, but it was on that list. So they can kind of see, like, what's moving through.
So out of, let's say, a week that you have 800 ideas, how many videos are getting made per week?
Well, if we're doing, you know, we did an election, we did election coverage. So for maybe 3 or 4 weeks, we were getting 800 ideas a week, and then we were making a total of 10 videos. So that was like, that's a, just a ton of ideas that are getting whittled down to there. The 200 ideas are we're making one video out of that.
And as the head writer, you're making the call on what videos get made?
So it's myself and the creative director has the final say, and then I will basically, like, all of the handful of the staff guys and myself will go through and make our picks. Then we'll kind of debate those one by one.
Are you good with the debating?
I'm good to the extent of, yeah, I think I'm good. I think I'm good. I have strong opinions, but like,
let's
these
say
guys
I it's
are
a
great.
Stupid idea.
Yeah.
I'm on staff now because
yes.
I've moved up from.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I have a really stupid idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Abe Lincoln, I don't know. Abe Lincoln is a Martian.
Okay.
Okay. It's a stupid idea.
Yes.
Okay. I think it'd be a great video.
Right.
Because
no.
Lincoln it's in people's consciousness, the movie, all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say no. And move on. I mean, that's honest.
Okay. Because you don't have time to.
Right.
And you're that blunt with people. No, I don't like that.
Yeah, I mean, actually, the way that it works is it's a good process in that people submit blind. So, like, what we get is, and so everybody's blind. So you get a huge list of ideas, and just as contributor, you know, contributor one, contributor two, contributor three. I'm one of those contributors. The staff guys are one of those contributors. The submitters are. So, like, you don't know who's submitting what. Which is great, because so then those room dynamics don't come into play.
Because you'll never know when I submit.
That's right. Until I see Abe Lincoln as a Martian, and then I'll say,
I'll hold that back.
Yes.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
We'll see that on The Daily Show. Okay. Emily, if you could turn the lights up, let's have, we've got some questions for our guest here. Yeah, right over here.
Hey.
Hi, what's your name?
Ranish.
How are you? And where do you study?
I take classes in the Illinois.
Right, okay,
now.
Great.
So I moved up here to Chicago, and I studied comedy because I've always loved it. Mm-hmm. And one of the earliest indications that I might be good at it mm-hmm. was when I made my family laugh in the 7th grade mm-hmm. at a Don Pablo's. And I said, hey, here's a great headline. Harvard study finds pants just longer form of shorts.
Mm-hmm.
And is that, how far would that get in your process?
Actually, I think it's right above Abe Lincoln tomorrow.
I like the setup. Harvard study finds. I mean, that's great. Like, build it up. Give it, like, a legit context. Just, you know, sometimes we use that word. It's all right. I mean, if I knew it came from a 7th grader, I'd say, that's good. Keep on keeping on.
You got to get used to it. You got to get hard, tough skin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is a family laugh, but no one else.
Yeah. Okay. Right here.
Hi. I'm Peter. Mm-hmm. As a writer, have you gone through processes where you were not writing mm-hmm. for periods, or were you always writing?
Yeah, I think, I'll for sure go through periods where I don't write and feel like I have absolutely nothing to write and... like, I'll never write again. and then come back to it. But I feel like, you know, I'm always scratching. Like, it's always, you always have a notebook. You always have, like, something.
But you, this got to be challenging because you're getting paid for this. So
yeah.
If you're burnt out on, let's say, on a Wednesday, mm-hmm. and you know you have Thursday and Friday, how do you barrel through that? Because that's got to happen.
Yeah, I think what's so great is, like, is the room, the writer's room dynamic, which, you know, would be appealing to anybody who likes improvisation, is just, it's so fun. I mean, that's just like, that's there, you're in a room full of people, and because it's your own thing, you know, you can say, like, let's just mess around. Like, everybody's distracted. It's Wednesday, everybody's tired, people are coming up with lousy ideas. Let's play, like, you know, some stupid game in here and burn off some energy for 2 hours. And
what
then,
would a
and
stupid game you guys would play? Like Zip Zap Zop or something like that?
Like we had a really like competitive game of just like of recycling can basketball going for a while. Just like anything that gets you sort of doing something different. And then messing around, you make jokes, like you, it just, like, you know how it is. You just feel better at the end of that. Like, mm-hmm. after an hour of just, like, messing around doing something, right. it's like, okay,
I got paid
your head
for,
is cleared.
Right, and I got
yeah.
paid for that hour.
Yeah,
that's
and
how
I, think,
I look at it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you have to, like, what's fun about working with good, these good people, too, is that you don't sweat it. Like, you have to put out, you have to have a script done, an idea and a script done by 4 o'clock. And it's going to shoot at 5 o'clock. And then it's going to go up later that night. And you're at noon and you have nothing. And you're sort of like, well, it'll happen. You know, and it's not going to happen if we get stressed about it.
And do you guys collaborate? Let's say, again, hypothetically, I'm on staff and I go, look, you know, I got an idea. I have some dialogue, but I really need some help. Do you guys pitch in together? And
yeah, so like we'll do one of two things. So like once the idea is set, then we'll do like a table brainstorm where it's just everybody throwing out jokes for it and like sort of setting a direction of like, here's how it's going to unfold. Like we'll set it as this. This is going to be the angle on the story. Here's a bunch of jokes. And then so like when the writer goes off to write, they've got a page of things they can already start to work with. Or, you know, like we had an experience where when the new Pope got appointed,
That was a big news day.
It was like it was a big news day, and it was clearly like there was a ton of interest. It was like, we have to do something about this, and there had been nothing pitched on that because there was like it had just happened in the middle of the day, and we were just like, and that was a day we were just messing around. The one we ended up coming up with was just Pope Francis resigns, so it was like an hour after he had been appointed new pope. We're like, well, that was it. It was too tough. Like a single hour in the Vatican was just too much, and he's got to step aside. With his family. And so like that was just kind of one of those ones that came out of the room and like moved real quickly.
Let me get some more questions.
Yeah.
How dependent is our sketch videos like success, like the success of the joke mm-hmm. on the actual video production?
I don't know. I think not really very much. Like I think if it's like if it's a great idea and you can hear it, you know, like if you can do enough that it like comes across, then it rises up. Like I feel like you hear a ton of like, well, it's got to be TV production quality to like really sort of make it out there. But I don't think that that's true. I think if it's incredibly funny, it'll work with whatever.
Great, right here. What's your name?
Ed.
Hey, Ed.
I often wondered whether outfits like Onion or Andy Borowitz used a list of comic perspectives so that when something new came along, like the Pope or something or other. You have a list of things that you look at, you know, like you know, who would benefit from this?
No, I think maybe you know, some people like kind of do that in their heads just naturally. It's not like there's like a list of them, but I think to an extent you sort of kick that around of like whose perspective do we tell this story from? Like God's reacting to this story or, you know, like altar boys are reacting to this story or the Pope is, you know, like sort of figuring out like what's the angle in. Yeah.
I thought that maybe Onion, a place like Onion would actually have a list.
Yeah.
That they would run down because
yeah.
that kind of thing repeats.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably you could distill it. I don't. Yeah.
Whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Yep. Great. Right over here.
Hey,
what's
TC.
Your name? TC.
Yeah. I'm at IO all the time, and when My Man's was going on, I'd go see it every week, and it was so fun to watch. Like, what was I know, like, you all love each other, and Tim and Mark are so great together, but what was the writing process for something like that that's a little different than Onion?
We would just keep a huge master list of bits, and so it's just, like, anytime Mark would sort of keep the, like, main book of, like, people just messing around, and then, like the book would come out and you'd be like, oh, okay, so that was a good like messing around, like something made it into the book. And then so sometimes we would just sort of like throw something together a few minutes before the show and then go try it, be like, okay, well, here's the bit, let's add in this and maybe this is the context and we'll try it. And then usually after like testing a bunch of stuff, then we would go back and like just script it out very, very specifically. So, like, by the time we would finish those shows, they would be, like, incredibly done.
So you were really crafting it as when you were on stage.
Yeah. So, like, we would do, and it depended. The first kind of show that we did was, a lot of it was written. A lot of it was, like, scripted out. And then the second show that we did was more improvised on stage. and then kind of like finished as that. So we would kind of, we'd go back and forth, but we would spend a lot of time. I mean, a lot of it, some of it was super fast. Some of it was just like, here's the idea. Those two guys go out on stage and do it. Some of it would be like slaving at the computer, all three of us together and trying to figure it out. So we kind of moved back and forth.
You know, I'm a huge Tim Robinson fan, and this is his first season on SNL. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they were using him very much.
Mm-hmm.
As a director, mm-hmm. what is the best use for Tim Robinson on SNL?
Yeah.
Would you agree that they're not using him enough?
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's so hard. I mean, that show is such a tricky animal. His best stuff is going to be stuff that he writes. And so it's stuff that he's going to get through. And I think there's going to be a little bit of educating America of how to understand the stuff that he does. And then it's just going to take, I mean, I think really by next season, you're just going to see, like, it's going to be the all Tim Robinson show. That's maybe too bold. I don't know.
Well, I hope you're right.
I don't know.
And I hope they have patience, you know, for that.
Yeah, you hope because Tim has patience.
Yeah, well, and also that they understand what they have there, you know,
yeah.
because he is not the, his sensibility to me is not typical of,
yeah.
Do you think a typical choice for Saturday Night Live?
I think probably not. I think what he has, though, is it's finished. Like, it's not finished, but he knows what he does, and he feels in command of his sensibility, and they hired him, and I don't think he feels any need to give them anything other than what they paid for. So I think once they figure out, I don't see him changing to suddenly be pitching stuff that's not in his voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he feels very confident in his voice. And I think once they figure out a way to showcase that voice in a good way, which I think that they will do. I mean, you know, you don't remember anybody from their first season. And then they finish and they feel like national icons. So I think he's headed there.
I hope you're right.
Yeah.
The other thing they say about the Onion, since they've moved to Chicago, is it's really hard to get writing jobs at the Onion. Like, they're not using Chicago talent.
Yeah.
They're a little more generous, I think, on the video side, but certainly on the print side. It's mm-hmm. been. What do you think that's a fair assessment of what's going on?
Yeah, I think it's just an incredibly different sensibility than what generally exists here, so that the office is they don't feel like improvisers, you know, and this is like sort of me coming in as an outsider because a lot of these guys are coming from New York, and it's like they're quiet, a lot of them are very quiet and very writerly and very.
Did you get any attitude when you came?
No, I really got welcomed mm-hmm. very openly, and they've all been like absolutely wonderful to me. And it's been great. But it is like the sensibility is such a writer sensibility where it's like, here, take this thing, go sit by yourself and come back with something that doesn't need to be reworked a lot. And I think the improviser sensibility is like, well, let's all sit in a room and let's throw out ideas and let's work it out together and then let's put it in front of an audience and then like get their feedback and like, you know, and then maybe sometime later somebody will tape it and then we'll transcribe it.
And then we'll go out and
have
drinks and then we'll come back and work.
And it's great, you know, and there's like awesome, amazing stuff comes out of that and that comes out for a really specific context. And it's like that, if you kind of come in with that mentality, then you struggle there.
So what would you tell somebody mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. in Chicago who wants to write for the Onion? What advice would you give them? Or in L.A. or New York, but to get a job at the Onion.
Well, I mean, on a practical level, like there are internships and opportunities to come work over there before you're writing, which helps you out. And then
can I use you as a reference?
Anybody who's listening can please use me as a reference.
Right. That's a little thing that Improv Nerd likes to give away.
Okay, good. Good. And then it's just like, it's just repetitions of writing those headlines. People who have Onion experience, like even if it's even on the intern, like what our interns submit in the submission process versus somebody who's coming in cold, it just feels so much more in voice and feels much more Onion. It's just repetitions.
So you would say get an internship.
I mean, on a very practical level, like that's probably the best route to do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Andy, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, there you have it, another episode of Improv Nerd. I want to thank our guest, head writer of the Onion News Network, Andy Miera. And as always, the good people here at Stage 773, our home base here in Chicago, and my producer, Ben Caprero. I'd like to thank our sponsor, Hotel Lincoln here in Chicago. If you're ever in town and you're looking for a hip hotel that's reasonably priced and is in the heart of Lincoln Park, it's convenient to everything, especially if you're into Second City, I.O., The Annoyance. It's a walk to Second City, and it's a cheap cab ride or public transportation to those other institutions. So check out Hotel Lincoln here in Chicago. If you want to know more information about my award-winning classes, and in July, if you're in Chicago, I will be teaching two intensive artist-low comedy workshops. So you can go to my website, where you'll also find the Improv Nerd blog. That's jimmycorain.com. And please, 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 I know I'm begging. I beg every episode. Please go to our fanbook Facebook page and like Improv Nerd. It really helps with my low self-esteem. And as always, I want to thank you guys for listening. I truly, truly appreciate it. And until next time, remember, walk, don't run.
Hello, I'm Kyle Ayers. I'm the host of Never Seen It, the podcast where comedians rewrite famous movies and TV shows they've never seen, and then we give them a read in studio. This is a clip I want to play for you guys from an episode where Langston Kerman rewrites Scarface. He's never seen it, but he wrote a script based on what he thinks he knows about it, and here's a clip. Give it a listen.
All right, Scarface, the new frontier. Interior, happening discotheque. Remember when we called clubs discotheques? LOL, the 70s were crazy. Night. The crowd bustles with young, hot Mexicans who are supposed to be Cuban and all are dressed in butterfly collared shirts and pants that look like JNCO jeans and pleated khakis had a really weird baby. There's sex in the air and Poppy wants a whiff.
Oh my God.
Scarface, 22 to 45.
Like he's a television audience demographic.
Devilishly handsome, not even a little bit Italian looking, so get that out of your dumb brain. Walks through the crowd with the confidence of a man who's going on MTV Cribs with the Ying Yang Twins one day. Does he actually have a scar on his face? Fuck no. Why would you even ask that? That's not important. What's important is that he is not at all a problematic stereotype and that he has come for his cocaine. As he approaches the red rope of the VIP, pronounced ve a pay in Spanish,
oh my God.
He spots his dear friend who is almost certainly going to become his enemy by the end of the film, Smooth Skin. Scarface yells out his signature line.
Ciao, Bella. It's me, Scarface.
Oh my God.